This hour brought to you by GCNLife.com. Live younger, look younger, feel younger at GCNLife.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome in live nationwide and around the world to Ron Segi today on this very special weekend, the 50th anniversary of the moon landing. And we have a show totally dedicated to that. Several years ago, I became very good friends with the first American in space, Alan Shepard, and we're going to spend the entire first hour playing that interview for you from over 21 years ago. The next hour, the man who spent 50 years covering all the space shots from NBC, Jay Barbary, who has a book that is called Live from Cape Canaveral. Then we're going to have my friend astronaut Mike Massimino joining us and astronaut Winston Scott. This is going to be an interesting and fun show. We're going to pause for a second. We're going to dedicate this first hour to my friend of many years who passed away in 1998, Alan Shepard. We'll be playing that interview coming up next.
Hi, this is Wayne Allyn Root, the Capitalist Evangelist. I'm here to introduce you to a special company with the potential to be one of the great all-American stories. Fortum Resources is a publicly traded, diversified natural resource company with oil, gas, and mining properties in North America and internationally. Fortum is led by Chairman Mark Bruner, the legendary oil man who built Ultra Petroleum from a 15-cent stock to $200 per share, creating $15 billion in shareholder profits. Mark has 30 years of experience in the oil and gas industry, overseeing contracts with Halliburton, ExxonMobil, and Hess. Fortum has over 350,000 acres of oil and gas resources, and more than half the acreage has been evaluated by world-renowned auditors Deloitte Touche. Fortum also owns the rights to the 180-square-mile City of Gold mining property. Fortum is traded on two global exchanges, U.S. ticker symbol FTMR. Repeat, FTMR. This is a rare ground-floor opportunity to capitalize on a proven energy industry legend. Please visit FortumResources.com. That's Fortum, F-O-R-T-E-M, Resources.com.
Balance of nature, changing the world one life at a time.
When I wasn't taking it and I was waiting for my operation, I was feeling very tired. Now I'm driving like 11, 12 hours a day. I told you I manage 15 gas stations. And I have so much energy, I even gave some of my pills for my son. And he said, Dad, this is good. So I like it. I'm healing so fast. It's like amazing. My family is so surprised because my wound closing up and doing so good. So that is working now that I'm starting taking my those fruits and vegetables.
Experience the balance of nature difference for yourself. For a limited time, you can receive a 30% discount and free shipping on your first preferred order of Balance of Nature. Call 800-246-8751 or go to balanceofnature.com and use discount code USA.
Welcome into Ron Segi today, live all across the USA and around the world. And as we mentioned in the introduction, a special show this week paying tribute to the 50th anniversary of the United States landing on the moon. And you've heard me talk many times about my friendship with Alan Shepard, who was the first American space, and he also walked on the moon. And so now what we're going to do is go into our archives and play that interview that we did with Alan so many years back. So ladies and gentlemen, this is the first interview that was the start of a long friendship between astronaut Alan Shepard and myself. Ladies and gentlemen, Alan Shepard.
Well, thank you for having me, Ron. It's a real pleasure for me to be on the show here with you. And since I'm an expert in rocketry, maybe we can get the show off the ground.
Hey, we discussed on the way over here the possibility of what are we going to talk about this evening. Frankly, if I had the opportunity, this could turn into a radio miniseries for the next four nights. I could ask you a million questions. How does it feel to open up a history book and see your name in it?
Frankly, I live very comfortably with that, Ron. Because none of us in the early days volunteered to be heroes. None of us volunteered to end up in history books. And the astronauts of today still feel the same way. The reason I make that point is that if a person wants to get involved in the astronaut program to become famous, then he has the wrong kind of motives. You've got to be involved in the business because you believe you're qualified to do it, you want to do it, it and you're willing to take the time and effort to make it a success. So although people say many times, I suppose, how does it feel to be in history books? And I'm proud of the fact that I am in the history books, but more proud of the fact that I've done what I've done as an individual.
Not only being the first in space, but also the fifth individual and a very elite crowd of only 12 to walk on the moon. Just a tremendous career. Now, you go back several years to being a test pilot. When the concept of the space program was first presented to you, how did you view it? I mean, what was your thoughts on it? Did you think that it was an idea that was far-fetched, or was it something that excited you and you could see the real potential of it ever coming on?
Well, actually, as you pointed out, once the decision was made to put men in space, the decision was also made that the pilots, the astronauts of that day, should be test pilots. They should be people who had flown airplanes at unusual speeds, unusual altitudes, used to being very objective, very dedicated in their training, almost to the point of being automatic, reacting automatically when something went wrong. So all of us were test pilots, and for us it was sort of a natural extension. Testing for the military involved flying airplanes higher and faster than anybody had ever done up until that point. So we saw the space program as being a natural extension of that, flying again higher and faster than anybody else. Although the nose cone didn't look very much like an airplane from the outside, with the help of the design engineers, we made it look like an airplane from the inside. In other words, it responded pretty much the way an airplane did. The one thing that we did that made a couple of the Air Force guys unhappy was we took away the rudder pedals, and a couple of our Air Force astronaut buddies said, gosh, you can't fly without rudder pedals. You know, you had a little hand controller that was pitch and yaw roll. In the old days, yaw was the rudder pedals, and they said, we can't learn how to do that. But we finally proved that you could, in fact, with one control, do pitch, yaw, and roll right there with a lot of practice, and so we're able to get the rudder pedals out of the cockpit.
And I don't mean to embarrass you by saying this, but when you think of George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, Charles Lindbergh, some of the great American heroes, you've got to include your name with that. And, of course, being the first American in space, fifth man to walk on the moon. Back in the late 50s, was it not, 59, 58, and through there, is that when the Mercury space program began, Al?
Yeah, actually, I think everybody considers that Sputnik, the unmanned Grapefruit satellites, in October 57, really started the space program. The manned aspect, as far as we were concerned, started in late 58. The selection program started then, and we were actually designated and showed up for work in April of 1959.
Now, when it was first presented to you and the seven astronauts were chosen, did you ever think that you were going to be the first one of the seven? And the seven was an elite crowd right there.
You got to be kidding, Ron. Of course I knew I was going to be first right from the start.
That movie was
Well, I say that jokingly, but seriously, I think that, again, getting back to why people do these sorts of things, you have to realize there's a tremendous amount of confidence, self-confidence, a tremendous amount of belief in one's ability, and naturally everybody in the seven wanted to be first, and naturally all the astronauts who are in training today want the very next flight that's available to them, because it's very much of an individual challenge. I just happened to be the right guy at the right time.
I know exactly where I was, and I can remember that day in May when you went up. But I wonder at the time, the program really knew, or if you really knew, how many millions of lives that you are influencing, and how many young lives that you are influencing. Do you ever think about that? I mean, the magnitude of what you did and the impact that it was on the world.
Well, I do, and it's sort of in keeping with your place in history comments. Let me just say that when I was a young man, I was interested in building model airplanes, and Lindbergh, of course, was my hero and encouraged me indirectly in those days to get involved in aviation. Of course, that led to my career, and it was one of the most memorable moments in my life to actually meet Colonel Lindbergh in later years, recognizing that was the effect that he had to a degree certainly on me. Then I can live a little more comfortably with being a hero, if you will, if there is some way that our accomplishments and I mean all the astronauts of yesterday and today, can inspire youngsters to follow in our footsteps tomorrow, then it's important. And that's the way I view it. That's the way I view being a hero and being in history books. If we can use that credibility to encourage youngsters to follow in our footsteps, because there are so many exciting things to do when you talk about flying people in space in the years ahead.
I know the ambition and, of course, the goal of the Mercury program was to one day springboard that into a moon landing. But did you really think back there in 61 that it was going to come as early as 69? It's not a long time.
No, I think that's a very astute question. The surprise was not that we made the landing, but that we did it in the time frame that we did. And I think that's a general comment as I look back on 30 years of manned spaceflight. It's amazing how quickly we have come to the point where we are today and how few accidents we've had in those 30 years. Of course, when you have an accident, it's always traumatic, but if we had said 30 years ago we're only going to have two accidents in 30 years of manned spaceflight, we'd say, boy, we'll take that right now, because obviously the risk was a lot higher, predicted to be a lot higher than that.
Let's talk about risk. You sat on top of that rocket in a very small capsule that was smaller than the size of a Volkswagen Bug and was blasted several hundred miles into space. What type of person, what type of thought process do you have to go through to be able to sit on that thing and not realize that you're on top of a potential bomb?
Well, I think most people think we have to be crazy, and a lot of folks in those days looked at us as being sort of strange kind of people, and I suppose we are unique in the sense that we recognize a challenge to our individual capabilities in that particular area, of course, piloting, willing to accept that challenge, and then willing to go through the hundreds of, yes, thousands of hours of training to be sure that we're absolutely, totally, properly honed and ready for the occasion, because if things go wrong, the pilots are supposed to take over and correct it and hopefully make the mission successful. One of the training methods which we used in the old days and as well today, I'd like to talk about, because it has implications in everyone's everyday life, and that is when one is approaching something unusual in their life. Let's say you're going to school and you're giving a final exam, which is very important to your degree, or let's say you're in business. You're going to a meeting which is going to be a decision which may affect the rest of your business life. You don't wait until the last minute to make decisions to try to respond to that. You say to yourself several weeks before, say, well, what am I going to do if this happens? What am I going to do if that happens? You take the advocacy position, and then you've already made up in your own mind a situation, decisions in which you'd be comfortable. This is an oversimplification, but that's basically the way you train for spaceflight. You say, what do I do if this blows up? What do I do if that turns off? What do I do if the rocket doesn't go on course? And that's the way you train. It gives you the confidence to be an astronaut, and using that advocacy position myself, looking at myself in the mirror, saying, did you really do yesterday what you should have done? It's been very helpful to me, and I think if people do a little bit more of that in their everyday lives, it'll be helpful to them as well.
You're listening to an interview that I did with my late friend, astronaut Alan B. Shepard, the first American in space and walked on the moon, as we commemorate the 50th anniversary of the American moon landing in July of 1969. And there's more to come with this interview with Alan Shepard in just a moment with Ron Segee today.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
When you have a pain in the neck, a real pain in the neck, back, shoulder, or legs, you now have two convenient choices to get fast relief without taking another pill. Because now, Sunny Bay heating wraps and pillows are available at both Amazon and Walmart. Yes, see Sunny Bay's 4.5 to 5-star customer reviews on Amazon.com or Walmart.com. Our microwavable heat wraps, heatable neck pillows, and extra large body wraps are designed better for perfect support support where and when you need it. Even while driving, Sunny Bay wraps will not burn and stay balanced to provide soothing hot or cold therapy to help treat temporary or chronic pain. And the best part, Sunny Bay quality products start at under $20. Join thousands of happy customers and see why Sunny Bay products have a lifetime 100% positive rating on both Amazon and Etsy. It's easy. Click Amazon or Walmart and search today for Sunny Bay.
Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but soon you'll need a plan and place to survive. Forget bunkers. You're not a live-underground gopher. You need Survivalist Camps, the ultimate fully functional, off-the-grid mobile survival bug-out house that's well-equipped and custom-built to outlast any other RV or trailer. Bold statement? You bet. See them now at survivalistcamps.com. That's survivalistcamps.com. Trust your family's survival to survivalistcamps.com.
It's pretty amazing when you consider that 7 years ago, we didn't have the treatments we have now. We cure 80% of children with cancer. Go back 50 years, we were curing 20 to 30%. This is the miracle story of modern medicine. We understand what makes this cancer tick. And of course, without donors from around the world, this just couldn't happen. There's one thing we're focused on, and that's beating this thing.
St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. Finding cures, saving children. Learn more at stjude.org.
Time is the one thing that we want more of. Without the donors, I wouldn't have my Audrey. They take care of our housing. They take care of our food. In addition to the best medical treatment that my daughter could ever have. So it allows me to focus on my daughter and getting her better.
St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. Finding cures, saving children. Learn more at stjude.org.
Back with Ron Sedgy today, this week remembering July 1969, 50 years from Americans being on the moon, and we're replaying an interview many years ago that I had with my dear friend, the late Alan B. Shepard, the first American in space.
Just a couple other comments about your first flight, and then we'll go on to some other of the 40 million questions that I want to ask you today. How high did you go that day?
The first flight I made was classified as a suborbital flight, which meant that we went basically up to orbital altitude to get way out of the atmosphere. And then because the Redstone didn't have enough thrust, total thrust, to put the Mercury capsule in orbit, came back into the atmosphere in sort of a ballistic trajectory. The height was about 116 miles, and the range at the point of impact was about 300 miles. The total mission took about 16 minutes, and only about 5 minutes of weightlessness. The zero gravity time was totally programmed, almost second by second, to indicate that man, in fact, would be rational while he was in zero gravity. He wouldn't have any physical or psychological problems, that he could, in fact, use this little three-axis hand controller we talked about before and precisely control the attitude of the spacecraft. In other words, fly like a test pilot. We went through all these things, and we really proved in that 5.5 minutes that man, in fact, could operate very effectively in under weightless conditions.
Yeah, but Alan, you had nobody did on the whole support crew, no previous experience as to what would have happened. I mean, today when you go into space, you have 30 years of experience to bank on. But that first day, you didn't know if the thing was going to get off the ground, if it was going to be successful, if any of these things were really going to come into place. That had to be an extremely high-pressure situation because of the inability to know what was really going to happen.
Well, I think, obviously, from the standpoint of the mechanical, the possible mechanical failures, we were trained to respond in situation A, you push button B, and all that sort of thing. And again, with respect to the physiological, how does a human react in zero gravity? Don't forget, we've been flying airplanes very high and very fast, and we had artificially created a lot of zero gravity time by pulling jets up at high speed and high altitudes and pushing over and essentially creating zero gravity. And matter of fact, in my own little airplane, would get about 10 to 15 seconds of zero gravity time so my little girls could float around in the cabin in the back. So it wasn't as if we were doing this sort of thing for the first time. It was a very carefully thought out program, and we were totally confident that things were going to work right.
I can't imagine, even as I mentioned on the way over here, going down I-4 and something the size of that capsule, let alone going 150 miles in space.
I can't imagine going down I-4 and something that size of the capsule either. We're on the same wavelength on that one.
certainly a big difference between that flight and the flight later, and I want to talk about that in a couple of seconds. But before we leave the Mercury flight and that first countdown, what was your adrenaline like when that thing was counting down the last 10 seconds? I mean, it had to be at supersonic speed.
Well, I think I was probably catabolizing the adrenaline at a pretty good rate, a pint a minute or something like that.
Can you still remember that feeling?
Well, actually, at that point, I was totally comfortable inside the capsule. I'd been there for almost 4 hours. We had a little mechanical problem that had to be fixed.
You say that nonchalantly, out of there in about 2 seconds, they told me that.
But I was anxious and getting ready to go. I knew I was ready, and I knew I was going to do a good job. And I was anxious to get going.
Think back to the original seven astronauts, and I can remember looking in books in the library as a high school student at that time and seeing those seven astronauts, and everybody knew the names and everything about you guys as if you were famous movie stars, rock stars. You had your own niche as far as a following was concerned. Those names come back to me this morning. I was rambling off at breakfast. My sons were amazed. I said, you know the names of these modern contemporary rock groups? That's what it was like when we were talking about the original seven astronauts.
I think that's true. And let me just make one kind of a comment along those lines. It was something which we lived with and do live with, and I hope we live with it comfortably. But you say, how about the guys of today who will never be recognized to the degree we were? And again, remind you that they're there because they know they can do the job. They know they're qualified to do the job, whether it's piloting functions, whether it's astronomy, whether it's geophysics, whatever kind of experiment they're doing. They know they're well qualified, and you know, frankly, the challenge to them is to do the job. And if they, having done that, then that makes their day.
You had, certainly when you came back, a hero's welcome. And one of the places that you ended up was the White House. I remember seeing pictures of you and President Kennedy. What was his response? What was the conversation that you had with the president with regards to your great feat? And, of course, he was an individual who just was enthralled with stuff like that.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, Ron, because what happened subsequent to my flight was really a surprise to all of us that were directly involved in the space program. I was scheduled to go to Washington, get a medal, ride to the Congress, say a few words, and get out of town because there were some other political things going on that the president didn't want, or at least his staff didn't want us interfering with. But at the end of the medal presentation ceremony, Kennedy said, we're going to have a change of plans. First of all, Shepard's coming with me now. I'm going to go over and address him, introduce him to the National Association of Broadcasters at a meeting down the street. Change number one. He said, secondly, after you finish the parade to the Congress, come back to the White House. We need to sit down and talk about what this flight has meant and what we can do in the future. We did, in fact, come back. The seven astronauts, the heads of the NASA executives were there, several members of the Space Committee of the House and the Senate side, and sat there in his office. I have a picture of it, which reminds me of his total enthusiasm. He said, what can we do? I mean, this is tremendous. This is really great. It's captured the spirit of the American people. Hundreds of thousands of people turned up for the parade. What can we do? The NASA folks said, well, we got a couple of guys over in the corner that were making scribbling notes about how you make an orbit rendezvous when you're in lunar orbit. And we're thinking about maybe going to the moon someday. And he said, I want a briefing. They briefed him about 10 days after that. And just 3 weeks after my flight was when he made the announcement. We're going to go to the moon, and we're going to do it in this decade. And I think even the NASA people were a little bit nervous, not about going to the moon, but about the time schedule, the time frame. Put a tremendous amount of pressure in the system. But it just showed how it captured his imagination, how Jack Kennedy was a real space buff. And he was just caught up in the excitement of people in space. And certainly that step, as unexpected as it was, put a lot of momentum in the space program that nobody really had anticipated ahead of time.
If you are just tuning in, you are listening to an interview that I had with my late friend, astronaut Alan Shepard, many years ago, as we this weekend remember July 1969, 50 years ago, that Americans walked on the moon. Alan Shepard was the first American in space. We'll be right back with more of this interview.
Bags under the eyes, crow's feet, fine lines and wrinkles are things adults complain about as they age. Now, there's Instantly Ageless. It works in minutes and is great for men and women.
I've probably noticed in the past 5 years that my eyes have gained a lot of fine lines, wrinkles, my crow's feet have gotten deeper. Wow. I was hoping for 5 years, but that's like what my eyes looked like 10 years ago.
That is really cool. Wrinkle gone?
It's easy. Just put it on your finger and go.
Now I wish I had more down here because I can still see one wrinkle. It's bugging me.
I am a little bit emotional. Turning 40, I didn't think would be a big deal to me, but that looks like the me that I feel like inside instead of what I see when I look in the mirror.
Try Instantly Ageless today at GCNLife.com. That's GCNLife.com. 30-day money-back guarantee and preferred price discount at GCNLife.com. That's GCNLife.com.
USA Radio News with John Hunt.
The heat wave gripping a large portion of the country has killed at least 3 people now and forced the evacuation of about 250 residents from a retirement home, and also has sparked the cancellation of numerous public events. More than 126 million are under excessive heat warnings, and another 31 million are under heat advisory, according to the National Weather Service. Funeral arrangements are set for a retired Supreme Court Justice. USA's Wendy King has the details.
The body of former Justice John Paul Stevens will lie in repose at the Supreme Court on Monday. Members of the public can pay their respects from 10:30 a.m. to 8 p.m. following a private ceremony in the court's Great Hall. Stevens died earlier this week at age 99. He'll be buried in a private service at Arlington National Cemetery, the 13th justice to be buried there. I'm Wendy King.
This is USA Radio News.
If you owe $10,000 or more to the IRS and you cannot afford to make payments to the IRS, you may qualify for the CNC tax program. This is a new program, and if you qualify, you won't make any payments to the IRS while in this program. Once you're accepted into this program, the IRS is forced to stop all harassing collection activities. No threatening phone calls, no wage garnishments, no bank levies, and no more monthly payments to the IRS. Get ready to write this number down. It's the most important number you'll ever need to end your IRS tax nightmare. Call Paramount Tax Relief at 800-547-4804 for a free confidential consultation to find out if you qualify for the CNC tax program. Once you are accepted into the CNC tax program, you won't make any payments to the IRS while in this program. Call Paramount Tax Relief now at 800-547-4804. That's 800-547-4804. Again, 800-547-4804.
Do the letters IRS give you anxiety? I'm Dan Pilla. I've defended people from the IRS for more than 40 years. My book, How to Get Tax Amnesty, created the tax resolution industry and is responsible for helping hundreds of thousands of people. It can help you, too. If you're a non-filer or facing IRS enforcement right now, your case is unique. You need real help, not cookie-cutter advice. My clients get my personal attention. Buy my book at danpilla.com and get a free consultation directly with me. That's danpilla.com. Let's start solving your tax problem right now.
Do you own a timeshare? Well, you probably now realize it wasn't a good idea, and the financial strain it's putting on you and your family has you stressed, and you probably think there's no way out. This is Steve Sanchez, and you know I've been an advocate for hardworking Americans just like you for 27 years, and there's a way out of this financial nightmare, and my friends at Wesley Financial, the leading timeshare cancellations company in the country, can help you cancel your timeshare guaranteed. Being lied to, misled, and pressured into buying a timeshare doesn't have to be your story. But freedom of being out of it can be. I have a special free information kit that will give you the step-by-step process that Wesley Financial uses to get you out of your timeshare guaranteed. Call 1-800-501-6100. That's 1-800-501-6100 or visit stevesanchez.info. You don't have to have the financial nightmare of a timeshare any longer. Wesley Financial can help you get out guaranteed. Call 1-800-501-6100.
Hunters, anglers, campers, and survivalists, get back to nature. Expand your horizons with the highest quality, most versatile, unique slingshots and sling bows on the market at slingbow.com. Slingbow products are compact and models start from just $17.98. They're perfect for your bug out bag or storing in your vehicle. Give yourself and your loved ones the excitement and tradition of slingbow, a new frontier in archery and truly modern twist on this primitive survival tool. Feel the thrill only at slingbow.com.
Today we're playing an interview that I did several years back with my friend, astronaut Alan Shepard, on this very special weekend, commemorating the 50 years since we landed on the moon, and we're going to continue with that interview now.
You know, you think back now, Wally Schirra, Deke Slayton, John Glenn, yourself, Gordon Cooper, Gus Grissom, Scott Carpenter, the original seven astronauts. The movie The Right Stuff. How close to the real thing was The Right Stuff?
Well, I think with respect to the movie and the book as well, the storyline was generally close, and I'm talking about the competition among the individuals, the need for understanding between the engineers, the design engineers, and so on, how we train and that sort of thing. The only difference I see in both the book and the movie is that the characterizations of the individuals were not all that close. And that, I think, primarily is because nobody talked to any of us about either the book or the movie. So you have a little artistic license here. One of the things that specifically bothered me was the fact that, you may recall, Grissom made the second suborbit flight following mine, and after he landed, the hatch blew off, an explosive hatch blew off, and the water came in, and Gus scrambled out, and the thing sank, and they said, well, Gus panicked, and he hit the switch and button and blew the door off. And, you know, after about 3 or 4 weeks of testing, they discovered conclusively that that was not the case, that the thing was just too sensitive, and the rocking motion of the waves is what blew the hatch off. But in the movie, Gus was the villain, you know, yeah. And that stigma stayed with him for the entire movie. And I just thought that sort of thing I had problems with personally.
Yeah, that was a sad part of it, and he wasn't invited to the White House.
Yeah, he was never a hero anymore after that, which of course, not only did he fly first Gemini flight, he took my place when I was grounded, and he was assigned first Gemini, and then, of course, he was assigned the first Apollo flight, which, unfortunately, was when the fire occurred.
You talk about when you were grounded. At the peak of your career, here you are, a young man, you have reached new heights, literally, you're known internationally, you're at really the pinnacle of what's happening in an entirely new generation, and you're grounded because of an illness. Tell us a little about what happened.
Well, yes, generally, I was assigned to fly the first Gemini mission with Tom Stafford as my co-pilot, and we were already in training as a crew when I suffered a syndrome called Meniere's, which it disturbs the vestibular in the inner ear. It destroys the balance, in some cases become nauseous, some hearing loss, and so on. And so the NASA people said, gosh, you can't fly for us anymore, but if you want to stick around, and we'll see if this thing doesn't correct itself. So they sort of put me in charge of astronaut training, and I waited for a while, and it did not correct itself. So I found a gentleman who was treating the problem surgically, and on my own, under an assumed name, I went through the surgical treatment, and fortunately it worked, and NASA looked at me for about another year and said, well, I guess you're back in the same shape you were, so we'll let you fly again. Of course, I was in charge of everything by then, and I immediately put myself on the next available mission, which turned out to be Apollo 14, some of the perks of being grounded.
Yeah, but it was a long time before you knew if you could fly again. It would be like in my job, all of a sudden I found I couldn't talk anymore. That would be something that obviously would have a large mental strain on you, I would assume.
Well, it was difficult because, of course, part of my job while I was grounded was to see that the astronauts trained properly, take them down to the Cape, pat them on the head, and stuff them in the nose cones and watch them fly, and it was frustrating to me. Probably reacted in a sense that put more pressure on the guys in training than I would have normally. They called me the IC commander because I guess my frustration sort of, if I could see them getting sloppy in their training, I was the first guy to bring it to their attention, and maybe in retrospect it was helpful, but certainly as far as my personal credibility was concerned, it didn't help very much. But the desire was still there, and I think that's what eventually drove me, obviously, to having the operation.
What's the difference in sensation, Alan, between going up on that Redstone and going up on that Saturn V? You know, when I go over to the Cape and I see the difference in those spacecraft. Now, you know, you look at the Mercury program, you look at the Redstone, you say, well, that's a big rocket, and it is. And you go on the tour and you see that Saturn V, and it looks like the Empire State Building flying down, let alone if the thing was, you know, in an upward position. What is the difference in the sensation launched from that?
Well, I think you could call a Redstone takeoff sort of like flying a fighter plane, and you could call a Saturn V takeoff sort of like flying a 747. Obviously, the Saturn V was a very comfortable vehicle, one in which we had a lot of confidence because of the fact we had some unmanned missions and then, of course, some manned circumlunar missions before the actual landings. A very pleasant rocket to fly. Physically, the only thing you have really is associated with the first stage, the takeoff, a lot of vibration because you have 7.5 million pounds of thrust. And then, of course, the buildup, as the fuel runs out in the first stage, the buildup is about 4G. In other words, you're pushed back into your couch at a force that's equal to four times your weight. As soon as you're above the atmosphere, the first stage cuts off, and then the second stage is a much lower thrust and much smoother because there's no atmosphere to create any kind of vibration.
Is it quiet, or do you hear like you would in a glider or a lot of wind?
Well, you hear a lot of noise from the radio back and forth because there's a lot of conversation that goes on, particularly during the powered phase of any of the mission, because the folks on the ground are looking over your shoulder through radio signals and so on. So you don't really notice a sense of quiet ever. Nothing is really ever totally quiet because you never pull the plug on the radio and some guy on the ground might have something important to say.
You think so?
What
was it like to walk on the moon? I mean, that's a very elite group that have been up there, and I'm sure that at night when you sit at home and you look out and you see that, you got to have different thoughts than what the general public would have.
Well, you're right. There's no question about it. Still, some 20 years after my lunar mission, I never look up at the moon up there in the black sky without some kind of a flashback. Some of the moments of excitement, some of the moments of satisfaction, some of the moments of pleasure. I even think about my golf shot up there once in a while. But it's something, of course, that I don't focus on every single day. But every time I look at it, I think of some little aspect that happened. And I think perhaps the one that comes back the most is to think how fortunate I am to have been given the opportunity to be up there.
What's the sensation now of being on the moon looking at the Earth?
Well, you know, I'm glad you bring that up. I think that you can talk a lot about how you walk on the moon, how you bounce up and down, how you collect rocks and all the mechanics of that. And one practices for that so much that one really feels comfortable up there, if one can be comfortable 240,000 miles away from home. But the one thing that really was unexpected, even to an old fighter pilot like me, was after I'd been on the surface for a few minutes and we'd gotten everything organized, we had a rest period scheduled, and I just took the time to look up at the Earth in the black sky for the first time, and it was just an overwhelming sight. The Earth is about four times as large as the moon, so if you can imagine a full moon at midnight and something four times that size, but you see so much colors, a lot of white reflected, the ice caps on the poles, for example, the blue of the ocean and the brown of the continents, the outline of the continents, and it's overwhelming because there it is, it's your home, and you think it's a huge, tremendous planet, which it is when you're living and walking on it. But to see it from that distance, and you realize it, in fact, it is very fragile. So we need to start considering about the environment and the effects of the ozone and so on, which, of course, space can do for us. And another thought I had was the fact that you don't see any political subdivisions. You know, here we tend to be so parochial about a county or a village or a state or a republic or whatever it happens to be, but you don't see those political subdivisions. You see it as a unit, as a planet. And I sense that someday perhaps the Security Council of the United Nations will have the opportunity to see the Earth from maybe not that distance, but several thousand miles and realize that there are, in fact, we are all related and we are one people on one planet. As I said before, it was totally unexpected with me. I'm sure all of my colleagues have expressed this in some way or another over the years. So I think that people really have to experience that. For example, let's say you're blind, and I try to tell you what standing at the edge of the Grand Canyon would be like. I mean, there's no way I could explain that to you. There's no way that poets really could explain that to you. So I think that as the years go by and more people travel in space and recognize this feeling that it will be very helpful to us.
In the event you just tuned in, you are listening to an interview I did several years ago with my late friend, astronaut Alan Shepard, the first American in space and the fifth to walk on the moon, on this special weekend remembering July 1969 and the world's first man on the moon. We'll continue this interview in our next segment.
It's pretty amazing when you consider that 7 years ago, we didn't have the treatments we have now. We cure 80% of children with cancer. Go back 50 years, we were curing 20 to 30%. This is the miracle story of modern medicine. We understand what makes this cancer tick. And of course, without donors from around the world, this just couldn't happen. There's one thing we're focused on, and that's beating this thing.
St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. Finding cures, saving children. Learn more at stjude.org.
Time is the one thing that we want more of. Without the donors, I wouldn't have my Audrey. They take care of our housing. They take care of our food. In addition to the best medical treatment that my daughter could ever have. So it allows me to focus on my daughter and getting her better.
St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. Finding cures, saving children. Learn more at St.
What would your life be like if you woke up each morning with new vitality, feeling better than you have in years, and you noticed a difference in your sleeping patterns, blood sugar levels, and had a sense of well-being overall? There's something that is changing thousands of people's lives, and you could be one of them. It's called Heart and Body Extract. Sharon Harris, co-creator of Heart and Body Extract, talks about the positive effects of Heart and Body Extract.
What happens with the formula Heart and Body Extract is it's giving the body the necessary vitamins, minerals, amino acids, enzymes, and phytonutrients so the body will heal itself. And yes, the body does have the ability to balance blood pressure, balance cholesterol, clean and unclog the arteries. It can also work on balancing the circulation for diabetics. So the body is an amazing thing. It simply needs some help so it has the tools to heal itself.
Heart and Body Extract gets results. To order your 2-month supply, call now, toll free at 866-295-5305. Order online at hbextract.com.
When I was a kid, I wanted to be just like Cal Ripken. It's definitely humbling to know that now people are calling me a hero. Instead of finding the IED with my metal detector, the IED found me first, and that resulted in double above-knee amputations. It's hard to describe the feeling of meeting somebody that you've always wanted to be like. There are people now that are looking up to you for their inspiration and to be their role model.
Visit saluteheroes.org to learn more.
This is George Norrie from Coast to Coast AM and History Channel's Ancient Aliens. We support the amazing energy, nutrition, and skincare products from Jeunesse. Jeunesse products are designed by leading doctors in their field with natural ingredients and even stem cell technology. These products help your body perform and look better. Shop Jeunesse at GCNLife.com or call 1-844-443-6637. GCNLife.com or 844-443-6637.
If you are trying to quit drinking or doing too many drugs, listen to me. You don't know me and we'll never meet. I had a problem like you once. I drank and used to party a little too much till it got out of control and almost ruined my life. I realized I needed help to fix my problem before it totally destroyed me. If you've tried to fix your drinking and drug problem and you know you can't do it alone, you need to call the National Treatment Advisors. They'll immerse you into a 30-day program to replace your old habits with new habits and totally change your life. And if you have PPO private health insurance, the entire program may be covered. Fix your problem right now before it gets any worse. Get clean. Call now and learn more. 800-506-6740. 800-506-6740. That's 800-506-6740.
Today, for the past hour, we've been listening to an interview that was done several years ago with the late astronaut Alan Shepard, one that I treasure, and we're going to continue this hour from this remarkable American. Now, Alan, you're spending some time with the next generation of astronauts, are you not?
Yes, I am. Actually, about 6 years ago, the original astronauts got together at a function, and the thing was so successful, we said, gosh, maybe we really ought to use our credibility jointly to encourage youngsters to follow in our footsteps in technology and so on. So we formed a nonprofit organization called the Mercury 7 Foundation. Since I'm the youngest and best looking and most articulate of the original astronauts, I'm the president of the... Seriously, we have been very successful over the years in fundraising activities to provide science scholarships for juniors and seniors in college, the major engineering universities around the country. And we also tie in with Space Camp, because their youngsters are going through space training, building model rockets, becoming members of shuttle crews, and going through simulated flights and so on. So it's something which we do, of course, on our own, on the side. Very rewarding to know that we are, in fact, directly contributing to the education of youngsters who will follow in our footsteps someday.
There's a toll-free number that you have that if somebody wants to get involved can call it.
Yes, the 800 number is 34 space.
All right, now remember, 34 space. You know, I was mentioning earlier about the impact of myself. I can remember going under the steps in my parents' basement, because it was shaped kind of like a wedge, and playing astronaut for days upon time. My father comes and says, "Where's Ron?" He says, "He's under those steps again, being that astronaut, that capsule, you know, football helmet on, mind you." Speaking about your golf game up on the moon, you tell a funny story about being at Sinatra's house golf tournament.
Yeah, well, actually, the occasion had really nothing to do with golf, except I was had been invited to stay at Frank's house for a golf tournament and invited to Jack Benny's birthday party. Frank was giving Jack a birthday party, so he said, "Clean up your act, Shepard, and come in." And so I put on my suit and walked in, and Benny was there, and I figured he'd just driven in to the Springs from L.A. So I said, "Jack, did you just drive in from the city?" He said, "No, we just came back from Mexico City. You wouldn't believe the altitude." And I'm looking at this guy. He's giving me, you know, 10,000 feet is a big deal. I've been a quarter million miles away from home. And I say, "Oh, Jack." Well, of course, by that time, he's on the floor, right? And I think it was 3 years later. He was in Houston, and we went to a cocktail party after a show and walked in the room, and he yelled across the room, "You won't believe the altitude." Because I still tell that story. That was like 25 years ago.
That's a great story. Tell the story about the Roger Van Vaughn.
Oh, Werner?
Oh, Van Werner, rather. Van Vaughn.
Well, of course, everybody knows, of course, Werner was the father of German rocketry. He came to our country, became a real patriot. But the story concerns the days when he was a young man over in Germany. And late in the afternoon, the school teacher came by, school ma'am came by and visited Mrs. Van Brown and said, "Mrs. Van Brown, Werner was not in school today, all day long, no Werner." And Mrs. Van Brown said, "Well, he's been playing in the field with his rockets. I'll speak to him when he comes home." Sure enough, sunset comes, Werner comes in, his clothes are all sooty and dirty, and Mama Van Brown says, "Werner, come here." She says, "You're a bad boy today, you missed school." He says, "Yeah, Mama, I know, but I'll hit it tomorrow."
That's great. Alan, what advice would you have for somebody listening to the show right now who hears what you've done and would like to follow suit? What should they do, he or she, prepare themselves for a career as an astronaut or in space travel?
Well, I would, Ron, I would not limit it, my advice, to space travel. I can then go back to something I said earlier, that the techniques of analyzing one's individual performance prior to some important event in your life, whether it be space flight, whether it be drilling an oil well, whether it be making a pitch to the boss for a higher salary, whether it be taking a final exam to graduate from college, I think one has to approach it very analytically and prepare yourself for what exigencies you can concerning that particular situation. In other words, I'm saying take an advocacy role. And in doing that, not only prepare yourself for any variations in the expected event, but also say to yourself, "All right, now, did I properly do my job yesterday? Did I leave work before I should have left work? Or did I take a little extra time for lunch?" And it's a very insidious thing. I think we all, being humans, tend to fall into that category. It's natural to goof off. It's natural to get back on your heels once in a while. And having seen that in the space program, resulting in a couple of failures, I have tried to analyze my life day by day. Look at yourself in the mirror every morning and say, "Okay, Alan, did you really do as well yesterday on the interview with Ron as you should have. And obviously I'm going to say, yes, I did a marvelous job. But I'm seriously, it's the kind of thing you say, well, you know, I could have done this better, or I could have done that better. It's helped me in my everyday life, and I think that's the kind of thing, the kind of advice that I'd give to youngsters and oldsters.
It's good advice. What's the future of the space program, Alan?
Well, I think far term, there's no question about the fact planetary travel for people is in order and in line. How to get there right now is under discussion. There are a couple of fairly widely separated points of view as to how you do it. And I think it probably these discussions should continue for at least another year because it's an expensive process and want to be sure we're going to do it the right way, whether you go via the moon or whether you go direct ascent. But that will happen. In the near term, I see the space station as being the very next step, and I view the space station as being a monitor of the environment. We talked a little bit earlier about particularly the atmospheric environment and how the weather affects it and so on, the ozone, the greenhouse effect and so on. The space station is an ideal platform for analyzing these kind of things on a day-to-day basis so that we have data and we can tell, yes, in fact, this is happening or that is happening. Because our environment's important to us, and the space station is an excellent observation platform for that.
What do you do today to keep busy? And I know that you're busy as can be. I mean, you got a ton of things going.
Well, I'm a businessman. I own my own business. I'm involved in two things. I'm a developer of shopping centers, and I'm also a general partner in a venture capital fund. I'm a director of some mutual funds. Again, we get involved in trying to encourage youngsters to follow scientific careers.
But when you think of people like Columbus and the Wright brothers and Charles Lindbergh and Lincoln and Washington, you got to think of Alan B. Shepard, really. Your place in history is deserved. It really is. And I want to thank you so much for being a guest with us.
That's my pleasure, and it's been a pleasure being with you, Ron.
Well, there you have it. Over the past 28 years and 19,000 guests, that is probably one of my top three interviews. He was quite a man. Apologize for a little bit of the sound quality, but it's an interview that I treasure. We're recognizing the 50th anniversary of the moon landing, July 1969, and for the past hour, we've been talking to the first American in space, astronaut Alan Shepard. We'll be right back with more of the show.
Would you like to get back that full head of hair from years past? Now, there is Reveal. Beverly Hills celebrity dermatologist Dr. Nathan Newman took nearly a decade to develop Reveal from natural botanicals to return to a full body head of hair. Reveal for men and women with a 30-day money-back guarantee at GCNLife.com or toll-free 844-443-6637. 844-443-6637. Reveal at GCNLife.com.
Jake was in big trouble with the IRS. He owed how much?
$92,000.
Ouch. The IRS left no room for Jake to breathe.
They put a lien on my house, took all the money out of my bank account, took money out of my paychecks. So it was a nightmare.
He needed help fast.
I figured that all these companies were the same until I called Federal Tax Management. You could just tell they knew what they were talking about. Right then and there, I felt like I had some hope.
Stop the liens, levies, and garnishments fast and qualify for one of several special IRS programs that could reduce or even eliminate your tax debt. So, how'd it go for Jake?
They did what they said they would do. They came through for me. I ended up saving an unbelievable amount. I was so jazzed. I was extremely happy.
If you owe more than $10,000 in back taxes, take Jake's advice.
Give Federal Tax Management a phone call. If they help me, they can help anybody.
Call the Federal Tax Management Hotline now. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625.
Anytime, any place, anywhere. Radio remains the most intimate of all forms of media. At home, at work, in the car, on smartphones. Over 90% of consumers still listen to radio every week. That makes choosing radio as a place to advertise your business one of the best decisions you can make. Email advertise@gcnlive.com and partner up with an experienced GCN representative. advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
MyPillow. When you go to MyPillow.com, click on the two-pack special, type in promo code USA, you'll get two MyPillow premium pillows for $69.98. Now, that's only $34.99 a pillow. You will not get that price anywhere retail. It's the lowest price ever offered on radio or TV. And like all MyPillow products, 10-year warranty, 60-day money-back guarantee. Go to MyPillow.com, click on the two-pack special, use my promo code USA.
Now you can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go. And pay a lot less guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
800-215-5141. 800-215-5141. That's 800-215-5141.
That's going to wrap up hour number one of Ron Segi today on this very special weekend, the 50th anniversary of the moon landing back in July 1969. We've spent the first hour with a friend that I treasure his memory and his friendship, the late astronaut Alan Shepard, the first American in space, and then later became the fifth American to walk on the moon. Next hour from NBC, he spent 50 years covering all the space shots, Jay Barbary with his book Live from Cape Canaveral, then astronaut Mike Massimino, and astronaut Winston Scott. And that's all coming up next hour, live all across the USA and around the world. We're going to pause for a second. We'll be back with hour number two to our tribute to the moon landing.